All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother, Barney. How you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, very good. Really excited for this one. Obviously, a big week in Portuguese football, but we also got a VIP with us today, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a very special guest on the show today. We're delighted to be joined by Zach Lowy, writer, journalist, founder of Breaking the Lines, one of the leading sources of content and information for football brands around the world, a huge League of Portugal nerd, just like us, and host of the long-running Cortelinhas podcast. Zach, man, this has been far too long in the making. It's great to have you on.
Hey guys, wow, is this actually my first time on Long Ball Football? That feels kind of crazy, given the fact that we've done so much together. I've been on a watch along, you know, we've had a lot of great times with you on my former podcast, and yeah, super excited to be on for the first time. You know, this is really, you know, the work that you guys have done since starting is just incredible, and I think that you guys are doing a fantastic service that, yeah, frankly, Portuguese football desperately needs. You know, you guys do a fantastic job of broadcasting all the stories with regards to Portuguese football. So hats off to you, and keep up the fantastic work.
Oh, man, we appreciate it. And it's always great just to be chatting to other like-minded League of Portugal enjoyers. So, I think it's going to be a great episode. There's so much to talk about, which we will get onto very shortly. But as always, just a quick reminder before we start that if you enjoy listening to the show, to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify, or even better, to get involved in our Patreon page, which you can do by checking out the link in the description of this show. But without further ado, gentlemen, let's get stuck in to some football. And as always, we're going to start where we always do, at the top of the table, which means starting with Sporting, who played out a huge game against FC Porto. The first game for Porto after their recent presidential elections. So Ange Villas-Boas elected president of the club. And in that sense, there was an air of a new dawn for Porto around this game. And they certainly lived up to that, flying out of the traps, going 2-0 ahead and looking like they were going to win the game before two goals in 90 seconds from substitute Victor Jokeres earned Sporting a point, which keeps them 5 points clear at the top of the table. There's so much to discuss about this game, including those elections, which we will come on to in due course. But we always like to start with the game of football itself. And Zach, as we've got you here, I'll come to you first. For 80 minutes of this game, it looked like perhaps one of Porto's best performances of the season, but it did somewhat fall apart at the end. But with the air of positivity around the elections and all that kind of stuff, were there positives to take for Porto from this game?
Yeah, I definitely think there were a lot of positives to take. You know, for one, you're going up against a Sporting team that has just been on another level to other teams in Portugal this season. And I think that going up in a Clásico against this high-powered side and being in control for nearly the entirety of the match, yeah, it's definitely some a positive to take from Porto's perspective. I think that as far as an individual standpoint goes, Martim Fernandes did very well in the right back position, filling in for João Mário. I believe it was his first start. It was, you know, he hasn't really played that much for this Porto side. But yeah, I think that FC Porto, this has obviously been a horrendous season for them. Yes, they might very well finish with a trophy if they beat Sporting in the Taça de Portugal. But I think that their squad planning has been, you know, has made it so that this yet another season where they lose the league title to their eternal rivals, you know, it was only a matter of time, right? It wasn't a coincidence. With that being said, though, I do think that there are a lot of promising building blocks, you know, to develop if you're Porto. You know, there's going to be a lot of changes this summer, right? Medi Taremi is going to depart on a free transfer. probably going to have one or two key players leave when you look at the financial issues that Porto have been finding themselves surrounded with. So I would definitely anticipate a few of those players leaving. But yeah, overall, I do think that the biggest thing that this Porto team has going for it is it's got a lot of unpredictable dynamic attackers who can, combine and cause problems for any team, right? We saw that in the 5-0 win against Benfica, and we saw that here. Frankly, they probably should have been up even more than 2-0. But yeah, this is a team that has, Pepe and Francisco Conceição, two players who don't always, whose importance isn't always reflected by goals and assists, but they're still so exciting to watch and so good at causing defenses some issues with their pace, with their relentless dribbling. So yeah, I think that this was a very good performance from them. And Sporting quite lucky to come away with a point, to come away with right that record of just one league defeat, I believe, intact. So I do think that as well, we talked a little bit about Porto's strengths. I think that perhaps the Achilles heel of the Sporting side is its defensive setup, which may seem a bit counterintuitive when you consider the fact that they have so many, two of the most promising center backs in Europe with Gonçalo Inácio and Ousmane Diomande, as well as a veteran leader like Sebastián Coates. But once again, another game where those three players weren't really on the same page there. So yeah, definitely a fairly lucky for Amorim's side to escape with a point. But as for Porto, as frustrating as it is, still a lot of positives.
Yeah, I think hearing Zach talk about those dynamic attacking players, I would actually include Martin Fernandez in that as well, in terms of, well, particularly what his assist for Pepe's goal, which was just such a great run, and the way he sort of cut inside and Heuermann slipped, and almost like, we're going to see that photo a lot on Twitter of the Heuermann sat down by Martin Fernandez. But yeah, I think that's a him as an individual is quite an interesting point, because we've just been talking about positives for Porto, but Fernandes is this young player who this is his first opportunity this season. That's something we haven't seen enough of. Is conscious had done it before by bringing players through from the B team, and the likes of Vitinha and Fabio Vieira, and how effective they were. This season, there's been that hasn't happened, and to see someone like Fernandes get his first start and play so well, when you consider the appearances of Sanchez, the Mexican right back who on loan from Ajax, and how poor his contribution has been when he's been given an opportunity. It just sort of, yeah, you sort of despair really when you're seeing a performance like that. I think there's going to be, yeah, a huge change obviously with Porto this summer, and it feels about time, because I think of all the individual brilliance in this team, and Evan Nilsson, for example, who he was a really good reminder in this game of why he's the chosen person to lead that line this season. He was excellent in this game. Yeah, I think there's still real issues there, and I'm excited to see how things change, because there's it feels like it's needed, and to sort of bring it back to this game to round out the point, it's to ship those two goals in such quick succession. And we saw how furious Conceição was at that. It does sort of sum up their season, moments of sloppiness, from when, just ruining things. And yeah, it was a they should have gone away with the win. They should have had three goals by half time.
I mean, I want to come back on that about where Sporting's goals came from. I have a slightly different interpretation of where Sporting's goals came from than that. But just sticking with Porto for a second, both of you picking up on Martin Fernandes, I think he's a really interesting case study to look at, because as Barney said, this is a player who in the past would have been primed for bringing through to the first team, giving opportunities. I mean, when you look at the player that he is, on the one hand, you could say, okay, he's making his first start for Porto in the league. In this game, maybe a bit out of his depth, but this is a player that has played, I presume, a lot of minutes in the second division, which for the Porto B team, which is, I think, more than a good enough level to test a player as a kind of backup right back option for FC Porto. So, why they had forgive me, the Mexican right back from Ajax on loan still remains somewhat of a mystery to me. He's also played a lot of minutes in the Youth Champions League. So it's not like this is a completely untested player, and it's not like he's a player that they won't be very well aware of. Zach, I want to come back to you to elaborate on something that you said as well about the building blocks of Porto going forward, of which Martin Fernandes could be a part. And also, I agree totally with what you guys said about Chico Conceição and Pepe, who both had great games, I thought, being key parts of that with Alan Varela and Evan Nielsen. Which of the, are those players, I presume, the key players that you look at when you look to the future of Porto? And I think we're about 10 minutes into the show. I'm going to hit you with the first big question, Zach. We talk about the future of Porto. Is Sergio Conceição part of that future for you? Because I see a lot of promise in the players that they've got available to them and the possible players that they could bring in. But with Sergio Conceição, I think I'm leaning towards the mindset that perhaps we're coming to the end of a cycle with Conceição as manager. Not to say that he's necessarily a bad manager or won't go on to success elsewhere, but that perhaps his cycle as Porto manager is coming to an end.
I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would put money on Sergio Conceição walking out the door in the summer. I think that that there I really don't see a scenario where he remains manager, and there are quite a few reasons for that. You look at the past 2 3 years at the Estádio do Dragão. Porto, they go from this incredible season where they lose Luis Diaz midway through the campaign and still end up setting a record, right, with 91 points, two or three domestic titles. And then the next season where they drop off a little bit and end up with a respectable campaign, nothing much to write home about, but of course losing out on the league title to Benfica. And to where they are now, right, trying to kind of scrap their way into a third place finish. It's just been a steep decline. And I think that, Porto, they aren't necessarily obligated to win the title every season, but they are obligated to challenge. And frankly, they've never looked capable of challenging Benfica or Sporting this season. I'm not saying that Conceição is to blame necessarily. I think that the player recruitment, letting key players like Otavio leave without signing sufficient replacements is more to blame. But with that being said, I also feel like we are certainly reaching the end of the cycle here. Porto have just dropped points in far too many unnecessary matches. Their big game record hasn't been that bad, but it's more these, games against likes of Estoril, Arauca. Where there's really no excuse to not win, and Porto failed to do so. We're seeing Porto, quite frankly, play some pretty dour football at times, far below what you'd expect from this. So I think there's that aspect, right, on the pitch. But then the context off the pitch, I think that's even more important. You look at this Porto side, you look at the way that Sergio Conceição has, perhaps felt about his players, right? Going back to January, freezing out their club record signing, David Carmo, forcing him to train apart from the squad. Then, right, just 2 weeks ago, doing the same thing, freezing out two summer signings in Jorge Sanchez, Ivan Jaime, as well as, Andre Franco and Tony Martinez. So it's clear that he's trying to target a lot of players. For poor performance, even some that have barely got a look in. And yeah, you just get the sense that Conceição has perhaps felt that he's reached his peak at Porto. So I think that apart from that, I think that obviously the big elephant in the room is what happened on Saturday, the elections in Porto, Pinto da Costa's reign coming to an end after 42 years, and the way that played out. The fact is, Pinto da Costa did not merely lose. He got demolished. He got humiliated, right? 20% to 80% for André Villas-Boas. And I think that, like there's an old African saying, right? When two elephants fight, it is the ground that suffers. I feel like that's been the case for Porto this season because, like, there it's been so divided. You've got these super dragoish, these ultras who are loyal to Pinto da Costa. Then you've got people who want change and who came out and voted for change. And so, I'm not too sure if you can have AVB and Conceição, two huge personalities, two mavericks in some ways, and for sure the two best Porto managers of the post-Mourinho era. Are they going to be able to coexist? I'm not so sure. I think that every single coaching cycle comes to an end at some point. Conceição has already been in charge for what, 7 years now. So I think that this is, approaching the time where he may decide to move on, go to Italy or some other place. I'll also th say this, the fact is, if there may have been a small chance of Conceição staying put at Porto past this summer, but I think that the events of the past 2 weeks have just completely erased that possibility. Because the fact is, Pinto da Costa, his kind of, last chance saloon to stave off the threat of Villas-Boas was in the Conceição family, right? The fact is, they waited a month to announce Francisco Conceição's permanent acquisition to drive up the hype for Pinto da Costa, for some reason giving him a 20% resale clause. I have no idea. I cannot wrap my head around that. But also Sergio Conceição, right? That kind of bizarre move. We were expecting Sergio to leave in the summer when his contract expires. Instead, he goes and signs a 4-year deal that can be voided for free if Pinto da Costa loses the election. Okay, so you're basically saying that I'm riding with my guy with Pinto da Costa, right? I'm putting all my eggs in that basket. And so, from my point of view, that was a kind of unnecessary step. And I think I'm sure that Villas-Boas would take it as a sign of disrespect to think that, for me, there's no reason why Conceição should be his manager. If you're going to do everything and take a side politically, and try to use your bully pulpit to get the Porto socios to vote for him, I don't see why Villas-Boas would be compelled to even think about giving Conceição another year. So yeah, it's time for a refresh. It's time for a reset, and it just doesn't make sense to have somebody who is such an important part of the old era sticking around for the new era.
I think what it boils down to really is the fact that the Porto fans have voted for change, and I don't think you get change with Sergio Conceição in charge. It's probably a good time just to for anybody who's not followed the Porto elections that closely, just to go into what happened over the weekend. So André Villas-Boas was elected president of FC Porto. He becomes the first new president of FC Porto after Pinto da Costa had been in charge for 43 years. That's almost half of the Primeira Liga's 90-year existence. In that time, Porto won apparently 1,300 trophies of some kind, including 23 league titles, 14 Taças de Portugal, 22 Super Taças, two Champions Leagues, two Europa Leagues, and many more to go with them. Undoubtedly, Pinto da Costa, one of the most successful club presidents in the history of European football, really. But his time came to an end. It was a landslide victory for ABB, an election which demonstrated beyond any doubt the desire for FC Porto fans for a fresh start. 26,000 socios voted in the elections, more than double that of any previous election. And André Villas-Boas received 80% of those votes. So André Villas-Boas' votes alone was more than any previous total vote count in a Porto election. An incredible result, and really the start of a new chapter. We did have one quick question on Twitter that I would put to both of you. I won't ask you to go too in depth because it could get quite complicated. Luciano Feltrin asks, What things could André Villas-Boas do to make an instant impact at Porto? So I guess in you guys' opinions, what are the things that AVB could do over the summer to make an impact next season? I guess the obvious thing would be a new manager and some recruitment. Barney, I'll come to you first on that.
Yeah, the recruitment would be the key for me. Obviously, whichever manager they get, they really need to look at their transfer strategy and their player development, because they've really stepped behind the likes of Sporting Benfica in terms of selling players for huge profits and developing youngsters. Although they have had a little bit of success with Vitinha and Fabio Vieira, but it still feels like they're just miles off it. And a lot of their recruitment's been, as you said earlier, Albert, and just, detailing some of the, and Zach detailing some of those players who've been frozen out of the squad, even though they were signed for significant fees. So that's the key area for me. They've really got to look at changing things and becoming, with all their financial issues, a bit more viable and generating more money through, better player and recruitment and development.
Yeah, and Zach, I don't know if you've got anything to add on that. The one thing I'm thinking definitely is a manager perhaps who's more open to working with younger players, because although, as Barney said, Conceição has brought through the likes of Vitinha and João Mario and those kind of players, there has always been that reluctance to bring through the younger players. It takes them a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that overall there just needs to be a massive overhaul. That's why, we're seeing a lot of speculation that Villas-Boas is not trying to just get a new manager. A lot of talk about Gian Piero Gasperini of Atalanta, but also a new sporting director, Andoni Zubizarreta. So that is, it's got to be twofold. It's got to be a 1-2 punch, right? And I think that the fact is, Porto, they have, like I said, they've made their bed with these last two seasons that have seen them lose the league title to Benfica and soon Sporting. Because the fact is, both from incomings as well as outgoings, it just has not been good enough. There have been a lot of talented players like David Carmo, like Ivan Jaime, who have, joined for big money fees and who really haven't gotten much in the way of a look-in. And it just seems like there's this disconnect between the coach and the recruitment team. So I think that's got to be a huge issue. I think as well, just trying to be more of a financially stable club. It seems like every 2 years there's this new scrutiny from FFP with regards to FC Porto. And you look at the past few years with all of these players leaving for free. It is just incredible. Chancel Mbemba, Héctor Herrera, Tecatito Corona basically left for pennies, and soon Mehdi Taremi. All of these incredible players leaving for free, when just like if they were sold just a year earlier, they would have yielded 20 million, 30 million euros in profit. That is clearly a big issue. So I think there's that aspect that you have to look at. And I will also say this, for me, one of the biggest incognitas with regards to Futebol Clube de Porto is what's going to happen with this ultra situation. Because like it's clear that for the past year, that there have been concentrated blackmail attempts to try to scare and intimidate Villas-Boas while he was challenging Pinto da Costa. And that's actually the reason, the reported reason why Villas-Boas did not travel to the Dragao to celebrate his victory, because he was scared of the presence of the Super Dragões, who have clearly built up a lot of power and influence under Pinto da Costa, right? There was a lot of jokes during the election that, like, Fernando Madureira Macaco, the leader of the Super Dragões, was going to have to go to the unemployment line and get benefits because he's not going to be getting any more free handouts from Pinto da Costa. But yeah, overall, I guess I'm very intrigued by that aspect. And I think that there could be that could be a very interesting scenario in the next few months with regards to Porto. I remember when Florentino Perez banned the Ultrasur with regards to Real Madrid. We've seen that with Barcelona banning the Boixonais, their violent ultra groups, right? What is going to happen with the Super Dragões and Porto, right? It seems like they were kind of loyalists to Pinto da Costa. How is that going to play out with Bias Boas now in charge? That I think is going to be a really interesting factor because, like I said, Porto are, they did have that image of being a divided club. We saw that at the General Assembly last year, right? Which didn't even make it to becoming a General Assembly before it broke out into chaos and violent scuffle. So I think that, yeah, that's going to be a big scenario that'll be playing out. But yeah, overall, I think it was just clear that as much of a legend as Pinto da Costa is, it had kind of become festering into something that was rotten. And it was clear that if he was going to stay in charge for another 4 years, it was going to ruin his legacy. So, even further. So, credit to Porto for sticking up. I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot of reactions from not just Portistas, but also Benfiquistas, and seeing how a lot of them are, they feel almost embarrassed. Seeing Porto fans come out in such staunch support of this new regime, right? Because of course, in 2020, right, we had João Noronha trying to take the helm and replace Luis Felipe Vieira, and of course, Vieira ended up winning that election. So they feel that they've been perhaps out-democratized by their rival fans. But yeah, I think for me, that's the biggest storyline that I'm excited to see play out. How is Vias Boas going to handle the Super Dragões? How is he going to minimize their influence or perhaps get them on the same page?
I mean, it's a fascinating question, and just from those two answers alone, we're building a picture of an awful lot of work that needs doing at FC Porto to change things around. And I think this summer is going to be one of the most interesting summers for Porto in many, many years. So it's one to keep an eye on. We've spoken a lot about Porto, and I think fairly so because it's a big moment for them. But I do want to talk about Sporting, especially as we've got Zach here. But Barnett, I want to come to you first on Sporting because obviously one thing that we spoke about on our Patreon preview show was the fact that Sporting didn't really need this game as much as Porto did. A loss or a draw, to be totally honest, was fine because they've got three games left against weaker opposition and now we know a 5-point cushion, which is more than enough for them to get the title over the line. But there are some disappointments, I think, in the way that they played. Obviously, the positives with the way they came back into the game and got the two late goals, and I think that does leave them in a better place psychologically because it builds some momentum and makes the point feel more positive than if they perhaps lost the lead. But this is one thing I'm interested to get both your thoughts on because for me, Ruben Amorim has had a lot of accolades this season, and rightfully so. I think he's done an incredible job. But for me, he has made the same mistake a couple of times this season, in big games, and that for me is when he's faced with a big game, and he decides to change a winning formula, perhaps because he thinks it only will work against smaller teams, or this is not the way to play against big clubs. We saw it in this game for me, with Gonçalo Inácio playing out of position at left wing back, with Ousmane Diomande behind him at left centre back. For me, left centre back is Ousmane Diomande's weakest position in the back three. I think central or right centre back is much better for him. And Gonçalo Inácio at left wing back, obviously a technically gifted player, especially for a centre back, but I don't think it worked. And I thought it was interesting to see Amorim tinker with the lineup in such a way that he thought would nullify FC Porto. I guess he was looking for double security against Chico Conceição and what have you. But I thought the team improved greatly with Nuno Santos on the pitch and obviously Victor Gyökeres as well. But that's a different question. He was only able to play a certain amount of the game through injury. But certainly, I thought the last 10 minutes of the game with Nuno Santos on the pitch, with Jenny, with Edwards, with Gyökeres, with the wealth of attacking talent that they've got on the pitch, they instantly look better. They scored two goals in a very quick space of time. And I think had Edwards not got sent off, I think there was only one team who looked likely to score a third goal, and that was Sporting. And I think that could have well happened, and that would have been a great result. But Barney, I'll come to you first. I mean, I don't know whether you agree with that, what you think of that, and how Sporting went into this game.
No, I totally agree with that. I think to think back a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the Benfica game and how we were praising Amorim for sort of going with a lineup which was there to sort of to win outright, to over just be so positive. This seems like, as you described, like they were playing for the not to lose, with the the Ignacio coming out left wing back and Diomande. It caused a lot of problems. I think the first problem was you lost Ignacio's distribution from the back line, and as you said, Diomande's weak on that left hand side. His distribution from that position lacked as and we also saw St. Just as well caught in possession, and both well, a couple of chances for Porto came from sort of those players differing on the ball or taking a wrong touch. It was also a shame that Franco Israel made an error for the goal as well, because that's been something that we've criticized Adam of a few times. But yeah, I really felt that it was too much from Amarin to deal with that. I think the statistic that I found to sort of highlight this point, which I really like, is about Nuno Santos. And when he's on the pitch, a Sporting score on average 3.3 goals every 90 minutes. That's the highest in Europe's main leagues for any player of any position. And when he's not on the field, that average of goals per 90 drops down to 2.1. So it's a huge difference maker. And I know he's not obviously not a as defensively sound as say Ignacio would be. And I agree with you. I think Aaron was looking at Conceição as that threat, but I just think when you can push them back with Nuno Santos, you've got to go for that. And he as he when he came on, he got that assist and made the difference. I think Gyökeres as well, with it was as you say, changed the game. And I think Aaron said he needs to be careful because he's going to get himself hurt. Like, I think Gyökeres just shows, every time the ball went in, both those times the ball went in the net, he went to grab it, and even the second time, grab it back and try and go for the winner. That mentality is great for the team. And I think, as I was saying earlier about the sort of distribution from the back line, when you've got Gyökeres on the pitch, he's much easier to find. They struggle to do that. I think in the first half, the person who was found the most in the sort of attacking area of the pitch was Ignacio playing at left wing back. That shows you the lack of availability from those front players and that movement that Gyökeres brings and the space he finds. No, I think this was, they were, as I said at the beginning, I think they were playing to not lose, and they were in a way they were lucky that they didn't end up losing, because that could have derailed them. And just to add to it, sorry, this all talk of Amorim going to London in a week as well, sort of a bad time.
On a plane paid for by Chelsea, apparently, but I won't go into
Who knows? But
that.
look, I think the point is, like, we've been heaping the praise on Amorim all season. It had this been a loss, and with that story, this could have potentially been a defining moment in the season. If it just makes that run a bit harder, but they've got the point, and it's, was it 4 points from their last three games? They should do it. So yeah, it but yeah, I think it was a poor starting 11 from Amorim.
Zach, I know you mentioned as well you thought they were lucky to get draw in this game. Just because we've got you here as a guest, I think I do want to ask you just more generally about Sporting, because despite the draw, even if they had lost, they would have had a 4 point lead with three games to go. They do look on course for another league title under Ruben Amorim, and he himself has obviously been under the spotlight a lot, not just because of his success at Sporting, but because of various rumors of places he might be managing next season should he leave Sporting. Obviously, I'm interested in your thoughts on the game, but also just in general for Sporting, what do you think has been the key to their success this year? I mean, there's so many players you could pick from, there's so many managers. It really has, excuse me, there's so many things that the manager has done that you can point to. And for me, it really does have a similar air to their last league title under Amorim, where he's built a very harmonious team and found a fairly consistent starting 11, which he trusts that he stuck to quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's been a similar air, but also there have been some differences. I think that Sporting team was very accustomed to grinding out results, pulling off narrow victories via late goals. This time, I think it's a little more, they're blowing teams away. with the amount of goals that they're scoring. And I think that obviously having Victor Gyökeres in their attack is a massive factor. For me, the best striker that Portugal has seen probably since Radamel Falcao. I just think he's a complete another level to anybody else in the league. And sometimes it's just that simple, right? Sometimes you've got a player who is just on another wavelength. And I think we saw that with Gyökeres. But I think overall, you can't just give all the credit to him as good as he's been. I think we've seen so much, so many other interesting tactical developments, so many other individual standouts. Jenni Katamo is a player who has gone from like completely off the radar to emerging as really the long-term replacement for Pedro Porro in that right wing back role. And that is one area where that has been so important for the Sporting team. And yeah, going back to what Barney was saying, I mean, Amorim was very lucky to come away with a point from this Clásico. I think that he frankly overcomplicated and overthought a lot of things. Why he thought Gonçalo Inácio at left wing back would be a intelligent solution, I have no idea why. But I think that he was perhaps a little too scared, a little too focused on what Porto was going to do, as opposed to thinking about what would be the right formation for his team. But yeah, overall, they've shown a lot of success in terms of being able to build through central areas, being able to, play it long, and allow Sporting to break through the opposition in a number of different ways. So yeah, I think that Gyökeres, he's been fantastic, but so many other players who are worth talking about. I recently wrote an article for Breaking Lines on Francisco Trincão. He's really come into his own, and really regained that confidence and form that we saw at Braga. And yeah, I think that overall, there have just been so many impressive stories from this Sporting team. Yes, there are those, flavors of the month like Diomande and Gyökeres, all of these hyped up players who every single Premier League fan wants on their team. But there's also these guys like Jenny, going from loan spells at what, Chaves and Vitória, and then someone like Daniel Bragança, who's had so many troubles with injuries, who's had to go out on loan to several different teams, right? And who's been able to really prove himself. So I think that that's the biggest for me. That's a really big plus for Ruben Amorim, that he's been able to not just do a great job with these promising young stars and increase their transfer value, but also, take these players who have kind of fallen off the radar, who have had to scrap it out on loan, and give them chances to prove themselves at the Alvalade. I think that he's done a fantastic job. Unfortunately, it'll probably be his last few weeks as sporting manager, but I think that he's really changed the club's fortunes and just done a fantastic job, really.
Absolutely. We do not have that much time left, so let's talk about another game and two other huge teams in the Primeira Liga. As Benfica faced Braga, pulling off a 3-1 home win, although they did have to come from behind with two late goals securing their victory. Very strong protests during the game from Benfica fans who threw flares onto the pitch in multiple occasions in protest against the club's performances and position in the league. There's a very strong feeling from a lot of Benfica fans that Roger Schmidt's time is up at Benfica. Zach, I want to come to you on Roger Schmidt. It's a really interesting one. As a neutral, do you think that Roger Schmidt has a future at Benfica? And what do you think it is about this season that's been so different from last season? Because I think Roger Schmidt had an awful lot of credit in the bank at the end of last season from not just Benfica fans, but also kind of neutral observers who saw him come into the Primeira Liga and make a real impression on the league. Benfica was so dominant for such a long period of time. But this season, it all just feels very different, and I'm not sure myself if I can put my finger on exactly what the difference has been.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to put the finger on it either. I mean, I think like for me, do I think Roger Schmidt should get another year in charge? Yes, I do. Do I think he will? I'm not so sure. I think that this Benfica team, let's be honest, it's been a pretty disappointing campaign for them. They have sort of challenged Sporting for the title, but they've always been kind of kept at arm's length. And I think that overall the performances have been quite underwhelming. I think that overall Benfica, there were some signs of decline afterwards, after Enzo Fernandez's mid-season departure, but they still did well enough to win the league title on the final day. I think that, yeah, like I said, a few reasons. I do think that a lot of these players are kind of being overplayed. There hasn't really been that much in the way of rotation. Players like João Neves, and a lot of other starters are just being stretched to the limit. And I think that's always going to result in a decline in performances. But I think overall as well, apart from João Neves, there haven't really been too many individual standouts from this Benfica side. And I think that's, like I said, there's been kind of a lack of cohesion in Roger Schmidt's game plan at times. And I think that, perhaps he's been caught in two minds on in some occasions. Like I think that he hasn't really known what to do with the attack. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that, right? I think that the two of the biggest reasons why Benfica are not going to win the league title is because they failed to replace Alex Grimaldo and Gonçalo Ramos, two of their most important players from that title winning campaign. Going with the likes of Juan Bernat, David Juricic, and Alvaro Carreras in the January window. And then of course with the center forward position, bringing in Artur Cabral, for me just a complete drop off in quality compared to Ramos and Darwin Nunez. You can't win a title with Artur Cabral. I'm sorry, he's just not good enough. And you can't win one with Kasper Tengstedt either. Maybe you can with Marcos Leonardo. I think that he's a very promising talent, and for me he's the only center forward who should be in this Benfica side next season. But I think that those two are massive issues that have really affected the rest of the campaign, because Roger Schmidt has always looked kind of out of ideas with regards to not just what team to play with, but also what substitutes and what in-game switches to make. So I do think that those are all going to be certain areas that the Benfica leadership are going to look at as they evaluate who's going to be the new manager next season. I do think that perhaps it has definitely been a little bit too predictable. I think that, like I said, Schmidt hasn't shown that much willingness to rotate and to go to plan B, or show that he even has a plan B. And I think that for me, Benfica, whenever I've watched them this season, they've just looked a little bit too elaborate, trying to have possession for the sake of possession, spending too much time passing it around, looking for the right window to shoot, as opposed to just like pulling the trigger. And I think that there's a two that there are several reasons behind that. I think that for one, there just isn't really that much pace or dynamism in this attack. I think that for me, I would have really liked to see David Neres, Angel Di Maria on the flanks, and Marcos Leonardo ahead of him. I think that perhaps Schmidt has been pumping the brakes a little too much and not w really willing to take those risks. But yeah, I think that it's been a let off for Benfica. Like I said, despite the disappointment, I would still stick with Roger Schmidt. I think that for me, I think that he's shown that he can be a very good coach for Benfica. I don't think that last season was necessarily a fluke. But you need to give him the players, you need to give him the right squad to build around. And I also think that Braga are going to be with a new manager. Porto are going to probably be with a new manager, probably Sporting as well. So I think that there's a chance, if you have somebody who knows the club, who knows the player as well, that perhaps will give you a leg up in terms of the title race. And I think that there's a good chance that we could see him, do what Amorim did this past season. Everybody thought that he was kind of taking a decline after that fourth place finish, and he goes around and wins the title at a canter. So yeah, I think that for me, I would give Schmidt definitely another year.
I think, Roger Schmidt, it's an interesting one because I think for me, the biggest failure, the reason Benfica haven't won the title is because of poor squad planning. And I think that's manifested itself in a few ways. The main one being that I think Roger Schmidt has a squad that he doesn't trust. And that's a huge problem. And I think we've seen him playing players out of position because he doesn't trust the options that he's got there. We've seen him not really know his best 11. I totally agree that I think there's big imbalances in the squad, especially in the choices he made of who starts up front. But with Roger Schmidt, it's a very different situation to other new managers, whereby he has proven that he can win the Primeira Liga. With Benfica, when he has a more balanced squad and a more well-rounded squad, I suppose the question is, would Roger Schmidt win the league with the squad that Sporting has? Undoubtedly, because I think he has the those managerial abilities. But you're spot on, Zach. It's not about whether he should be given another year; it's whether he will be. And I think those upstairs at Benfica will have sensed the unease around probably not just the fans but also probably the squad as well. So I think it's probably unlikely that Roger Schmidt lasts another year. Just lastly then, Zach, because me and Barney have discussed Braga a lot this season, and it's been an interesting year for them. I suppose an underwhelming season, you could say, after the promise of last year and the success of last season and what was on paper a great transfer market. One thing me and Barney have also talked about was the decision to allow Artur Jorge to leave at the time that they did, because although he perhaps wasn't the most convincing manager, it has kind of left their season in a bit of limbo with no permanent manager lined up. And at a crucial time of the season where they still have a third place to fight for. Do you think it's fair to say this season that Braga have regressed in any ways compared to last year? Or is this just the reality of a league where Braga will always be competing against three other teams with superior resources?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that with regards to Braga, I was certainly expecting more. I think that they had a very good transfer window in the summer, bringing in veterans like João Moutinho, but also bringing in key players, very exciting talents such as Rodrigo Salazar. So yeah, I certainly had high expectations for them, and I think that overall they'll be definitely kicking themselves that they didn't do more in their return to the Champions League after 13 years. But overall, what I will say is that Braga, for me, they were just way too focused in terms of retooling their attack, building on to that front six, and they really ignored the back line. Because for me, when I look at this Braga team, just so inconsistent, so many childish errors in defense, and it just seems like they really did not understand the scope of the challenge ahead of them in terms of not only reaching the Champions League and playing against Union Berlin, Napoli, and Real Madrid, but also trying to build on that third place finish, trying to capitalize on a season where, as we know now, that Benfica and Porto took a few steps back. So I do think that it's certainly a missed opportunity, especially with Simon Banza having this incredible individual campaign, So there have been a lot of bright lights from this season, like Alvaro Jallow, who's already got a move to Athletic Club, like Banza, like Roger Fernandes, who's been recently frozen out of this team. But as far as, individual mistakes leading up to it, I do think there have been quite a few. I think that Braga, finishing fourth m would not be that much of a blow for them, but I do think that if they were to finish behind their crosstown rivals Vitória, that would be a major embarrassment to the fans on that side of the Minho. But yeah, like I said, I just think that for me, Braga's biggest mistake was just really ignoring their defensive sector. They brought in a 40-year-old Jose Font. They've got, Sikun Yakate, who, looked decent to me this season, but has really just completely dropped off, in my opinion, over the past few months. And I think that he's been just so error prone, so chaotic. A lot of ridiculous penalties and own goals committed by him. So I do think they need, two new center backs. And I think that, overall, they just have not really shown the right focus and mentality, to approach this season. As far as the coaching situation goes, I think that I think ideally you'd keep hold of Arthur George. From what Antonio Salvador said, it seemed like he was negotiating with Botafogo behind their back. So I can understand why you'd want to, get him out, and especially when his when he was set to leave in the summer already. But of course, not being able to agree a deal with Daniel Sousa and having to wait until the summer to bring him in from Arauca, that's certainly a blow. But yeah, overall, Braga, I think that there's gonna be a lot of reflecting that they need to do this summer. I think that there's going to be a lot of key areas that they're going to need to find a way. Especially, we haven't even talked about Al-Mushrati in terms of his January departure. I still feel like they're missing a player with his, physicality and ability to spot the right pass and pick open a defense. I think that that's going to be a position that they're going to have to look at. And then, yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what happens with certain players. Obviously, Ja Lo is going to leave. Cher N'Dour from PSG, are they going to try to extend his loan? What's going to be the deal there? But yeah, I think overall, I think the biggest thing with Braga is they need at least like three new defenders. I think that apart from Victor Gomez, I know he got sent off against Benfica, but I like him a lot. I think that he's a really diligent defender. I think that apart from Victor Gomez, for me, there just isn't enough quality. There aren't enough players who, like, when you see defending a 1v1 situation, that you're not going to get heart palpitations, right? There just aren't really that much in the way of surefire deals at the back. But I think that Braga, if they can keep hold of, their veteran leaders in João Moutinho and Mateus Magalhães, if they can build on their attack and replenish the back line, I think that there's going to be that there's a good chance that we could see them take a step forward and potentially reach the top three again.
Absolutely. And so much more we could discuss about Braga and the rest of the league. But Zach, I know we have to let you go now. So that is all we've got time for on this week's episode of the Long Ball Football. Zach, it just leaves me to say a big thank you to yourself for joining us. If anybody wants to follow Zach, they can find him on Twitter. You can find Between the Lines on Twitter and their website and all the amazing content that they put out. I highly recommend for any European football fan or any fan of world football in general, because I know you guys cover a lot of stuff. But man, thank you so much. We've got to do this again soon.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. Really love being on the show, and definitely hope to be on again soon.
Cheers, man. All right. See you next time, guys.
Take care. Bye.